Hi, welcome back to Liberty NZ. I'm Grant Edwards, and with me is Claire Swinney.
Oh, hello, Grant. How are you doing today?
Very well. All the better for hearing you. I just wonder, would you be able to tell our listeners a little bit about your background, how you got involved in this, watching the weather, and we'll take it from there.
Okay. My interest in aerosol trails, commonly referred to as chemtrails, and my interest in weather modification technology began in late 2005. A friend sent a documentary called Aerosol Crimes, which I highly recommend everyone watch. It's made by a scientist called Clifford Carnicom, and he lives in Santa Fe, New Mexico. He made the first edition of this documentary in early 2005, and Carnicom runs a not-for-profit organisation called Carnicom Institute, and you can read his work at carnicominstitute.org. Anyway, his documentary showed that masses of particulates, metals, are being sprayed into the atmosphere, and they've been used to change the atmosphere of the planet. And he noted that in areas where this is occurring, there are droughts occurring, coinciding with the spraying. So fast forward to January 2010, I think it was January the 2nd, 2010, when we first saw aerosol trails in Whangarei. And I got a report from someone that they'd seen them on January the 1st, 2010. Also, there was a lady in Hickaring in Northland who reported seeing a chemtrail stretching from horizon to horizon. That was on November the 26th, 2009. We kept seeing aerosol trails regularly in Whangarei from early 2010 throughout the period of drought, and I predicted on the basis of Clifford Carnicom's work that there was going to be a drought, and the government declared one on the 21st of January 2010. And that was just the beginning, because there was another drought declared for the whole of the North Island in March 2013, and there was another drought declared for Northland in 2017, and in Northland in February 2020. And throughout these droughts, aerosol trails were being seen regularly. Obviously, there were droughts in other areas of New Zealand, but I've just been focusing on the ones that are local. And so, I kept the website going, and it's got over 3,000 posts on it now. The website is called Northland New Zealand Chemtrails Watch, and you can find that at chemtrailsnorthnz.wordpress.com.
I've really enjoyed looking through it. You've done a fabulous job on that, Claire. Yeah, they bank on us not looking up, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
You know, not being observant about what's going on in the sky, I think. They bank on that.
Yes, and they've been trying to brainwash the public for some time now. Like, for example, newsreaders, and you see their background sometimes, they've got what looks like chemtrails. And also, the Microsoft products have things like chemtrails in the background just to get people used to seeing them. So,
to look like it's natural.
Yeah, it becomes normalised, doesn't it?
So clever. Yeah. He who controls the media controls the thinking of the masses.
Yes, and there's certainly been a concerted effort to conceal the truth about chemtrails, including with children, and I'd like to talk about that. Well, shortly before the widespread use of chemtrails in New Zealand, the Ministry of Education, in conjunction with the Royal Society and NASA, introduced a Kiwi Kids Cloud Identification Guide, which you can find online. It's in PDF format. There, I found at least 10 or 11 pictures of aerosol trails in there, and also there's some what I would call man-made clouds, not natural clouds. And there are two photos showing chemtrails, obvious chemtrails, under the title Cirrostratus, and a picture of six chemtrails sprayed in parallel. I mean, you can't get more obvious than that, can you? And it claims they're comprised of ice crystals. There's also a photo of two chemtrails under the heading Cirrus Facts, which claims that they are comprised of ice crystals as well, when evidence shows that chemtrails are comprised of particulates of metals, which are being found in rainwater samples, including aluminium, manganese, zinc, barium and strontium, for example. It's worth mentioning that the Royal Society logo is on this booklet, and the Royal Society has been pushing the man-made global warming scam due to carbon dioxide, and they made a statement that New Zealand is going to be affected by climate change and the impacts are set to increase in magnitude. Floods, droughts, storms and fires will become more frequent unless significant action is taken. The Royal Society has obviously got a conflict of interest and they're involved in this brainwashing exercise against the people of New Zealand, just as the schools are with their man-made climate change due to carbon dioxide lessons.
We've got to get our 24/7 radio station going so we can get the word out to as many people as we can about all the wickedness that's going on in the world and put up a resistance.
Yes, that would be like a dream come true, wouldn't it? Yeah, in the book Angels Don't Play This Harp, which is by Jean Manning and Dr. Nick Biggitch, it mentions that the White House advisor on weather modification says Defense Department studying ways to manipulate changes of earth and sky and so as to affect the weather. And that was in 1958. And I sent you an article about weather modification technology being used to cause a flood in Lynmouth in the UK, which is on the BBC website.
Good.
Did you see that? The point is that this technology has been used for decades, and a concerted effort has been made to keep us from being aware that it's going on. And
I think it's really got to read the word on it, because I mean I'm a bit skeptical. I'm not so skeptical now after talking to you and talking to Nigel Bray, is another New Zealander that's researching this. But you've got to keep an open mind with everything, you know. And I think it's very feasible, very feasible indeed. And they wouldn't tell you that, not really. Because they have to get all the sorts of permission, wouldn't they? No one would give permission to spray that.
If you think it's just the realms of the conspiracy theorists, there is an article that was published by the UK Guardian in 2002, and a programme on the BBC made, and also ITV, the other channel. It was called the Zinc Cadmium Sulfide Trials, where millions of people in the UK were sprayed between 1955 and 1963. That's on the public record. TV programs have been made about it, Grant.
We don't even know. It might even be giving us cancer. You don't know.
Well, that's right. Cadmium is a carcinogen, and they're pretending that it was benign as far as they were concerned. It may have been done for depopulation purposes. And you can find the article online if you look up UK Guardian, and the title of the article is Millions Were in Germ War Tests.
Our skin is an organ. You know, it's like sort of dipping your kidney in the stuff, because your skin absorbs. It's the least of all organs, but it is an organ, our skin.
Stopping yes, well, people will be breathing it in. And there was absorbing a late... Sorry?
Breathing it in, absorbing it into your skin. Horrible.
Well, you should watch the programme. Watch the programme, Grant. and
Cool. Thank you so
hear what locals had to say about what happened.
According to these documents, there was no option but to keep these trials secret, despite some openness in the US about similar trials in the early 1960s. In August 1960, Salisbury and its surrounding area was sprayed with particles of zinc cadmium sulfide.
So a plane flew about 40 miles away from Salisbury, and for 100 miles, it flew in an arc, for 100 miles it was spraying this zinc cadmium sulfide particles, spraying about £1 per mile, so £100 in all was used. All across Salisbury, there was a sampling grid set up. There were two grids set up. One was rural, one was in the centre of the city. And they'd both be monitoring the air. At every one of these stations, air monitoring was taking place.
Cadmium is a known carcinogen. These trials were done without any toxicology tests being carried out. Normally, when Porton scientists use a simulant for tests, they gave it a T number. This substance had no such number. Even Porton's own official biographer mentions in an internal review how surprising it was that no tests were done before or after the spraying. He concludes there are no reports on toxicity.
They really thought that this was stable. They thought that it wasn't going to cause any harm to anybody and proceeded on that basis. They just assumed that it would be safe.
I don't think they deny that the substance itself is toxic because they made sure that all their workers wore appropriate protective equipment while using the stuff. They all wore dust masks with home office respirator kits. They all made sure that they wore surgeons' caps, surgeons' gloves and overalls, and that the overalls were washed in a special laundry. And the building that the zinc cadmium sulfide was stored in was demolished by burning. It was incinerated.
50 years ago, secret biological warfare trials were carried out in the skies and on the streets of East Anglia without the public knowing. So alarming are our discoveries that tonight's programme is an inside-out special. Were three deaths from cancer in this woman's family the result of spraying cadmium from military aircraft?
I really put it down to the cadmium being dropped and it was settled into the soil.
It was top secret. It mustn't be told to the people what was happening. I think it does matter, you know, in terms of the health of people, that they know that this is being inflicted on them.
People living in vast areas of Bedfordshire, Norfolk and the East Coast became guinea pigs in covert defence experiments. Inside Out disentangles the facts from the deceit to reveal a disturbing chapter of secret history that may prove to be at odds with the official line. Rural Bedfordshire was sprayed from aircraft and, more shockingly, from a converted lorry. The city of Norwich was hit over a sustained period. The Ministry of Defence have consistently said there was no significant health risk as a result of the experiments.
I used to work in the cancer field and always knew that cadmium, you know, was a deposit in your body that you oughtn't to have. Why they chose cadmium, why they did the whole test, you know, is a mystery to me.
In 1963, Norfolk was first sprayed with this chemical. At the time, Yvonne Jarman lived on Halvergate Marshes near Great Yarmouth. There was no history of cancer in her family before then.
First of all, my mother had esophageal cancer and she died with it. And then my sister, she had esophageal cancer and she died with it October 2005. And then my brother, he died with it. And this was earlier this year. And now I've got it.
Do you believe then that Halvergate could have a higher concentration of this cadmium because of its position and where the wind would have blown the zinc cadmium sulfide at the time of the tests?
Well, I don't know if it could have been any more there, any more than it is in other places, but I'm pretty sure that Halvergate had its fair share.
Inside Out has delved deeper into this story. Not only have we discovered that scant regard was paid to the safety of these experiments, but that there were highly questionable ethics involved. This is a copy of the official report. It acknowledges that cadmium is a poisonous heavy metal, but it was not tested for its toxicity prior to the experiments. Alarmingly, this was admitted to be a deficit.
Normally, a substance used by Porton Down, especially in a public area, would be subjected to a toxicity test. This toxicity test would mean that the substance was given a unique T number. Zinc cadmium sulfide has no T number. No one appears to have looked into the ramifications of breathing this substance in, especially in the size that they sprayed it in, between 1 and 5 microns, which obviously means that it gets deep into your lungs.
So what is safe exposure to a poison? In the States, the trials in the 1950s and 60s were more openly known about, and there were people prepared to speak out against toxic spraying in public places. An environmental professor, Art Spomer, became concerned about the deliberate exposure of cadmium to humans. Professor Spomer told his superiors about the potential risks of open-air spraying, but initially he was ignored. It was only when he published a scientific article that anyone took any notice. Spomer's article was based on medical research into cadmium poisoning done as early as the 1930s. It was known then that cadmium entering the human body in any dosage or concentration was harmful to health. Inside Out tracked him down to his home in Illinois, and he agreed to talk to us. Professor Spomer, do you still stand by what you wrote about the effects of inhaling cadmium?
Yeah, I don't think anything has changed since that. I'm not a medical person, but and I don't directly follow that literature, but I don't think anything's changed.
Do you think the fluorescent particle trials should have ever taken place in the UK?
I have no idea why they did them, because they had better ways to study what they were trying to find out. And so I'm not quite sure why they... I think it was an unnecessary hazard to expose people to this material, whether they knew it was toxic or not. Although, they should have known cadmium. Cadmium is, is known for a long time to be toxic.
Should zinc cadmium ever be inhaled or ingested into the body?
No, not intentionally. Yeah, no.
I think the main issue, as far as we're concerned, was the frequency, to how many times this was done. And this van went round the village lanes and sprayed sometimes 5-6 times a day from the top of the van.
Oh my God! Yeah. Well, it's stupid science. If in this case where if they had some knowledge of the toxicity of the material, it's probably criminal.
The population of Norfolk, population around Bedford, in fact the whole east of England, could still be at risk from future experiments, which the Ministry of Defence refused to rule out.
There's more background to this story on our website, bbc.co.uk/insideout.
And now, how are they squirting this stuff in? Is it all just spraying these aerosols into the clouds or into the atmosphere? How do they?
A chap called Graham Ball, who was a skydiver, he was jumping at Helensville. He mentioned that when he was at 10,000 feet, he saw advanced technology. He said it was aircraft without wings spraying aerosol trails very rapidly indeed. And also the commercial aeroplanes are being used to spray as well. We can see them coming over here in Whangarei, for example. I see Korean Air and Air New Zealand, and I know they're the planes because you can identify them in real time using Flight Radar 24.com.
Oh, there's a good app for that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you use?
Radar 24? Yes, Flight Radar 24.com.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So if you see a plane going over, you can quickly jump on it, identify the plane, the altitude it's at as well, and there's some other bits of information on there as well, which might be of interest to people. But, and also apparently the military aircraft have been seen spraying.
Now, military, are they identifiable with radar 24?
Yes, it does show military aircraft. It's showing aircraft that have got an ADS-B transponder, that stands for Automatic Dependent Surveillance Broadcast Transponder. And I understand they became mandatory for aircraft in New Zealand on the 31st of December 2022.
Some of them, they have NA on them. You don't know who they are or where they are. I see them flying over, but you don't know where they're from and where they're going.
Mm.
get a lot of those. I'm on the flight path where I am from Kerikeri down to Whangarei.
Oh, rightio.
Yeah, I over my face.
Yeah. A chap in Christchurch recorded one of those Dash 8s, the ones used for domestic flights, and it shows the aerosol coming out from the wings. So the smaller planes have been used as well. The domestic planes apparently have been caught doing it as well. It's not just the very large ones. Yeah.
Now, some of the critics of this are going to say to you, well, that's just simply a vapor that comes off the wings at a certain altitude. How do you respond to that?
Well, vapor doesn't hang around in the air for minutes. It doesn't hang around in the air for sometimes more than an hour. You can see these trails spreading out. Whereas the condensation is normally gone within, say, a minute.
Okay, yeah. Because I remember the old days when you'd see an aircraft fly over and you might see a bit of a vapor trail.
And that vanished pretty quickly, didn't it? But these don't, and they can hang around. I recorded, for example, an Air New Zealand plane coming over. I made a video of it, and the trail hung around for more than an hour and spread out. You see them spreading out, and this aerosol creates a milky white layer in the sky. And the skies used to be much darker blue than they are now. Yeah, it's quite sad.
About 3 weeks ago, just before the cyclone Gabriella came through, there were reports of Air Force aircraft in West Auckland spraying back. Look, they were spraying backwards and forwards doing these routes. Mm-hmm. Did you hear anything about that? I heard there were. West Auckland, and I can't remember what suburb, but they were going backwards and forwards. And the person on Facebook, I think it might have been, would call the Whenuapai Air Base and find out what's going on, what are these people doing, and they couldn't get any answers. They were definitely spraying, and they were military aircraft. They were, you know, Royal New Zealand Air Force spraying.
Right. No, I didn't hear anything about that one.
I just heard about it, and I thought, that's interesting, because it was around about just before Gabriel.
That is interesting. Were you aware that the US Air Force used cloud seeding to make it rain heavily during the Vietnam War? It was called Operation Popeye between 67 and 72. Were you aware that they used weather modification technology during the Vietnam War?
I think you might have mentioned it to me in passing when we spoke last.
Yeah, North and South Vietnam, Laos and Cambodia, and the US military conducted secret operations intended to produce heavy rain and reduce movement and trafficability along portions of the Ho Chi Minh Trail. Yeah, that they were trying to block off the transport routes.
So they couldn't move with all their supplies and ammunition.
Yeah, that's right. And the rain-making story made the front of the New York Times. That's right. And
so anyone that says this is conspiracy theory nonsense, tin hat, foil wearing nonsense, well, they need to bring themselves up to date. It's right.
Well, this is old news. Yes. It's not just up to date. I mean, this was decades ago, Grant.
Yeah.
And
really good stuff, Claire. You're giving us some good information.
And so anyway, it's continued. The weather modification has been continuing, and it has been referred to as aerosol Armageddon by some, modifying the climate to make it increasingly difficult for it to support life.
A little behind this, where are they going to hang out while they're killing us and poisoning us and wrecking our atmosphere? Where do they hide? They have bunkers.
Well, we can survive in this atmosphere. They might have the means to, for example, they might be using a doctor recommended that we drink water rich in silica to take the heavy metals out of our body. They might have all sorts of advice from
their own doctors about how to deal with the poisons that they're breathing in.
Right.
And also their homes might have pretty good air conditioning compared to the average home.
Yeah. Yes, I hear that some of these wealthy people have hyperbaric chambers. The whole homes are hyperbaric, so that they've got a slightly higher pressure and a slightly more oxygen going into the home, and they're living in that. I wonder if that's their game, whether they can survive in that sort of environment for quite a few hours a day, which just enriches them healthier, and they heal better and keep them healthy. Because a lot of sports people have these very expensive hyperbaric chambers where the oxygen is slightly pressurized and heal and stay fit and healthy. Not allowed to advertise any benefits from them.
Oh, I see. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. But they want to keep it quiet about how good they are. Right, taking supplements and possibly spending time in these hyperbaric chambers.
Yeah, goodness knows what they've got. So let's think, what else is there to talk about? We haven't spoken about Morgellons, have we, which Clifford Carnicom of Santa Fe, New Mexico, has done a lot of work about.
Clifford Carnicom has identified a cross-domain bacteria as being responsible for the so-called Morgellons condition, and he's got a lot of work on his website regarding this very worrying new condition.
And he believes that everyone has been infected with these fibres that have been dispersed using aerosol trails. And he said this is a kind of bacteria which is very hard to exterminate. It's in a like a tube, and it's found if you use what's called the red wine spit test, and people are using this test to put the red wine in, and it dyes the colours the fibres, and people are finding they're spitting out these things that are referred to as Morgellons fibres. Yes, it's
So how do you do this test? You just get some red wine and spit in it?
If you go to just Google online red wine spit test and look up Morgellons, and you'll find out how to do it. I'm sorry, I haven't read about it for some time, but Morgellons, Morgellons. Morgellons. And he's got people to do this test, and he said all of them produced these fibres, and he believes we've all been infected via the chemtrails. Or he calls them aerosol trails. He doesn't like using the term chemtrails. We've all been infected with these with this material.
Where do you think the safest place on Earth is to avoid these trails, these aerosols?
Probably in one of the very wealthy people's homes, I imagine.
Oh, yeah, in one of their homes.
Probably someone in the Rothschild family. That they would have a nice, safe home, wouldn't they?
You'd think so, wouldn't you? Alaska, maybe somewhere like Alaska might be a nice, safe place to stay away from them.
There's the heart facility at Alaska, Gakona, Alaska. That's the So that's probably been inundated with aerosol trails, I imagine.
And so do you think most of the weather warfare is aerosol? When you say the heart, does that work with the aerosols? I think when I spoke to Nigel, he said spray out this sort of like a nano metallic substance, and then when HAARP starts up, it heats it. And
if you want to learn about HAARP, there is that book by Jean Manny and Dr. Begich, Angels Don't Play This Harp.
And there's the book Chemtrails Harp and the Full Spectrum Dominance of Planet Earth by Alana Freeland, which is at many libraries around New Zealand. If your library doesn't have it, ask them to get it in. And you can follow the author, Alana Freeland, on Gab. And she's always got some interesting posts about what is going on, the latest updates.
Is there any misinformation out there on the weather warfare, the geoengineering, I guess you call it, or is it pretty good?
Well, yes, yeah, very much so. There's misinformation. The mainstream media has been pushing the idea that there's this stratospheric aerosol geoengineering that is going to be occurring, and a lot of people wrongly assume that what we're seeing in the sky now is what they've been talking about. Solar geoengineering, which is supposedly to stop man-made global warming. So yes, there's been a big problem with people jumping to the wrong conclusion, Grant, that we've got this solar geoengineering. It's called stratospheric aerosol geoengineering, and right, that I believe is what's covered in the Paris Agreement.
But the aerosols have been used for other purposes. And I should point out that the aerosol spraying that we're seeing is occurring in the troposphere. It's not occurring in the stratosphere. And so it can't be stratospheric aerosol geoengineering. Yeah, it just can't. Carnicom has written a good article on that topic called The Clash of Evidence.
What you're talking about makes perfect sense to me, Claire. You know, I've got to say that from a month ago, I was pretty sceptical. But after speaking to you and speaking to Nigel Gray, and the references that you've given have been phenomenal. So that, for those of us that want to really research the subject, we've just got to look at those and read, put the work in, and we'll be right. But too many of us just go and Google something, and all we find is just a quick cut and paste response, that, attempting to debunk people like yourself and Nigel, and it's not an answer. You know, you don't know who these people are. They could be fools for the globalists. Who knows? I definitely believe that we are under attack from a foreign power that wants to form a one world government and have us all as, neo-feudal slaves in their new world order.
Definitely. There's plenty of evidence there. I mean, I've just touched on a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of the evidence that is available. And so this, I'll give you a bit more. And this relates to a hurricane, which is a cyclone, isn't it? Dr. Joe Golden of the American Meteorological Society spoke about how aerosol trails, the slang term for which is chemtrails, were used to manipulate the weather during the 29th Conference on Hurricanes and Tropical Meteorology on May the 10th, 2010. So there they are. That's the 29th Conference in 2010. So they've been looking into the matter of hurricanes, haven't they, for some time. And he discussed how aerosols were effective at decreasing the intensity of Hurricane Katrina. So he was admitting that they were fiddling with Hurricane Katrina. That was 2005. Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans.
So Claire, tell me, what are the functions of chemtrails?
That's a very good question. I think probably the best thing to do is to have a look at Clifford Carnicom's work. He's a fastidious scientist who spent a lot of time looking very carefully at what's going on. He maintains that they have at least seven functions, including environmental modification and control, and that includes weather manipulation. And there are also biological operations, and that might include, for example, the dissemination of these so-called Morgellons fibres are infecting people. And they're also used for magnetic operations, including harp, cell towers, and military applications. and they're used for planetary and geophysical manipulation, modification, and their chemtrails are also used for a global surveillance system and to detect ionic disturbances from exotic propulsion systems. And for example, that would refer to UFOs, for example. Yeah.
This is very interesting. Yeah, you've certainly brought a lot more to the table than when I spoke to you before, and I'm looking forward to speaking to you again about other things as I learn. I'll start doing some research and I'll look at some of those, all of them, of the information that you've given me, and then I'll be probably a wee bit easier to talk to, so that you know I'll have a better idea of what it is you're talking about.
Hmm.
So I'd also, when I spoke to Nigel Gray today, he said that he felt that they were drones about the size of Cessna that were doing a lot of this aerosol spraying.
Mm-hmm.
You heard anything to that? That could verify that?
No, yeah. I haven't. No, like I mentioned before about Graham who did the skydiving, seeing the advanced technology. Yeah. And John Ison, the editor of Uncensored, told me that he used a telescope one day and he saw something that looked like advanced technology, you know, like it was without wings. And on the, I think it was on Clifford Carnicon's site, I saw some disc-like aircraft that had been seen in the States as well, spraying them. But
fascinating. Yeah, really good. Well, thank you so much. That's it's been really good talking to you, and I'm hoping that I can speak to you regularly if you're keen. As soon as new information comes to light, I'd really like to discuss it with you, and see where we can go with this, because I definitely think that now that the COVID narrative seems to be taking a spell for a while, that the climate change is what they're pushing, and we've really got to bring people up to date with their tricks.
Mm.
What they're planning for us, so that we can be not for the propaganda. Too many people fell for the COVID thing. We've got to not let them go that way. Interfere with the climate change.
Yeah, because the tyranny is really going to start with this climate change narrative. Yeah. But there's.
Of course there.
Mm-hmm.
Look, a farmer will hire a helicopter pilot to spray his crops. Of course they're spraying us. Why would we think they wouldn't be? Of course they are. They get poison to us, or they want to modify our environment. It just stands to reason that there would be. It just seems that it's, now that I'm speaking to you and learning more about this, it's so logical that they would be doing this, whoever they are.
Yep.
And politicians, their motivation is what? They just pay them money. They just give them a monthly bonus or something somewhere on some Swiss bank account, and they do what they're told by their masters. Or are they brainwashed into the whole, you know, are they sort of indoctrinated? Is it indoctrination, or is it just purely financial gain that they're doing these, you know, allowing this stuff to carry on?
In my opinion, undoubtedly they know what's going on. But from a political standpoint, it seems apparent that MPs are unable to take action, because if they admit whether modification technology is being used, the emissions trading scheme and the so-called climate change action will be exposed as scams and the government exposed as committing fraud. So they just can't do it. I mean, they want their paychecks, don't they? See what you think when you listen to this clip of US Vice President Lyndon B. Johnson speaking about controlling the weather, and this is from 1962.
It lays the predicate and the foundation for the development of a weather satellite that will permit man to determine the world's cloud layer and ultimately to control the weather, and he who controls the weather will control the world.
us, you know, what do we need to do? Do we need to take action? And if so, you know, how do we do? How do we take action?
How do we take action? Well, I suppose the most important thing is to educate other people that our weather is being controlled, and this business about humans and animals releasing, you know, carbon dioxide emissions, which is causing global warming, and this is causing, you know, these weather disasters, is just a load of nonsense.
So rubbish.
Yeah. Mm. Yep.
So we've really got to educate ourselves and tell our neighbours.
And tell our neighbours.
Not like Jacinda says, don't talk to your neighbours. Talk to your neighbours. Do the opposite.
Yeah, talk to your neighbours.
Oh, we're speaking with P.S. Swinney, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. It's been most enlightening, and I'm looking forward to having another chat with you soon, Claire.
Okay, Grant. Thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate you getting the word out. Okay.
Righto. Thanks, Claire. That was really good.